Thanks, everyone. Thanks for coming, and especially thanks to Jamie for inviting me here and giving me the opportunity to speak. And so I'll be presenting some results that we have in distillation of two different quantum resources, coherence and entanglement. And these are results, so some of them have been published in a paper we have on the archive about coherence. Some of them are upcoming, and some of them are even planned in the future. So I'm just kind of, I think they all make sense together, so I want to share everything with you, and I hope that you find something interesting, and maybe we can also work together on some follow-ups to these ideas. And so before I begin, I wanted to stress the part about coherence here, because coherence is a bit of a controversial topic nowadays sometimes, because people have strong opinions about coherence, and many people hate the recent theory of coherence. And the reasons why are because, first of all, the kind of the physical implications, physical meaning of coherence is sometimes not very obvious. And also, many people consider, I mean, many results in coherence are essentially taking results from entanglement and redoing them for coherence. So that's obviously, that's not very scientifically honest in some sense, maybe. So what I will try to convince you today is that coherence can be interesting on its own, can lead to new results, new insights, and can actually tell us also things about entanglement that we couldn't, or that would have been much more difficult to find otherwise, because it's much easier in many cases to look into coherence and entanglement, so it actually can give us much more insight about entanglement. So to begin with, let me quickly introduce you to quantum resources in general. A resource theory, what we mean by a resource theory is some restriction on the allowed sets of states and operations that we can use and perform on our quantum system. So, we fix some set of states that are free, as in we are allowed to use them for free at no cost, and free operations in the same sense that the operations we are allowed to perform in this framework. So the typical example of resource theory is entanglement, which consists of separable states and LOCC operations. And the idea here is that it's physically well motivated, because we start with the LOCC operations and say our free states are the ones that we can prepare with the LOCC operations. So this makes sense in this way, but one can also start from separable states and say, what are the operations we allow? And in this way, we have actually much more choice about the operations, because, for example, we can choose separable operations or PPT operations, and they all make sense in different contexts to use different sets of operations for the resource theory of entanglement. And the other resource theory we'll be considering is coherence. And coherence has the problem that it starts with the states, okay? So here, the states are the so-called incoherent states, which are diagonal in a given basis. So you fix a basis and say that the diagonal states in this basis are free states, the incoherent states. And then the problem is that there is no single choice of operations that one can use. And this is just a small subset of the operations that people have considered for coherence. And it's not actually clear which ones are the good ones, which ones we should be considering. So in a way, it's a problem. In a way, it's a feature, because it forces us to look into different sets of operations. And it forces us to look more broadly at what can we do with different sets of operations and which ones are more useful for certain things. So this also gives us insight about entanglement and this different sets of operations for entanglement. So for coherence, we will stick with a set of usually considered standard choices of operations. So these are the ones that people usually consider in the literature, and these are the ones that we will kind of focus on in this talk. So, given these operations and states, we want to define resource measures, resource monotones, and we will define a monotone to be a function which is zero on the set of free states, if and only if a state is free, and it satisfies so-called monotonicity. So we say that free operations can never increase a given measure. So this is intuitive, because you cannot generate a resource with the free operations. So these are two basic conditions. One additional condition people frequently want to have is so-called strong monotonicity. What this we have here in a so-called instrument. So these are free operations which are not CPTP, but they sum up to a CPTP operation altogether. And what this means is that it's monotonic on average. So essentially, we cannot increase the resource even with post-selection.
So here you have this lambda is an element of O intersection with quantum operations.
Yes.
What is O embedded in? Do you think of it as subset of linear operations or?
So I try to be kind of vague here, but yeah, essentially you can just subset of linear maps, yeah. And then you can intersect it like this, yeah. So what I mean is essentially just, usually it's not ambiguous to say that something is free and completely positive, but not trace preserving, for example. You can define kind of like subnormalized operations like that, yeah. So with this kind of formalism, what we can say is that, or the reason we look into entanglement and coherence is because they have this unique maximally resourceful state. So these are the usual kind of maximally entangled state, and in a very similar way, one can define the maximal coherence state. I won't even distinguish them in notation because they are just the same thing in different resource theories. Here for entanglement, we will denote by D the dimension of one of the subsystems, and for coherence, D is the dimension of the whole space. I just kind of try to unify the notation here. But the idea here is that the maximally resourceful state actually can be defined in two different ways. One is the one that maximizes these measures, and one is the one from which we can obtain all the other states, or we can transform it, we can obtain states with the free operations. So essentially, that is the reasoning behind the original definition of the maximally entangled state, kind of the one that we can use LOCC to transform into any other state. Okay, so now in the following, F can denote, for example, separable states or incoherent states. And actually, it's a bit more general than that, but we'll stick to these two resource theories and look into a few choices of the measures that people have defined in the literature. So, trace distance is a fundamental quantity in quantum information, has a strong operational meaning as the in the distinguishability of quantum systems. And so, not surprisingly, this was one of the first measures was defined for entanglement, the trace distance. So you essentially minimize the distance to the set of separable states. Seems intuitive, seems fine. The only problem is that it's actually not strongly monotonic. And this was actually an open question for almost 20 years and was solved only last year. And surprisingly, actually, it was solved in the research theory of coherence first, and then that result was used to show this for entanglement. So coherence is not useless. I'm trying to stress this. So this is a problem, because sometimes we want the strong monotonicity to kind of to say that we are not allowing any kind of resource generation, and this is this might be considered a problem with this measure. So how to fix this problem? One can define something called the modified trace distance, which is essentially optimizing the same trace distance, but now with respect to not the separable states, but the cone of separable positive operators. So kind of you're allowing some positive constant in front of the separable operator. So this is a conic optimization problem, and we can take the dual of this. And it looks like this. So essentially, what we have here is optimizing the overlap. So this is kind of just the trace of the product. Of the original state rho with w, which w is in the range, and it's in the so-called, so minus w is in the dual set. So this dual is defined in this way. It's just, it's a very frequently encountered set. And usually, if we can characterize the set f nicely, the dual is also easy to characterize. So for example, for coherence, when we are talking about this dual, all of these programs will be SDPs. So that is the advantage of coherence, because usually for entanglement, we are not actually able to compute these measures, but for coherence, we can just plug them into MATLAB and have exact results. So that's something that can give us insights about exact solutions to many problems that we have been struggling with for entanglement, for example. But but in general, these problems have nice properties, even if we cannot actually solve them exactly. So this can be chosen some other set of free states. But now, what do we want to do with this quantity? Well, we want to extend it to a family of measures. And we make the very revolutionary almost step of adding one parameter here. We define this family of measures with a parameter m. And this essentially just we add one parameter here. And so obviously, for m equals 1, this corresponds back to this modified trace distance. But what does it correspond on the, if you increase m? Well, for m equals d minus 1, this gives you the so-called robustness. So if m equals d equals 1 for both coherence and entanglement, this corresponds to so-called robustness of entanglement or robustness of, yes?
So robustness, like, there are like variants, like absolute, generalized, and random robustness.
Should I understand this as the random robustness?
The generalized robustness.
Okay.
Yes, for this was called just robustness of coherence, so I'm just using the robustness because that's the most commonly encountered one. So, yeah. Yes, so kind of now this gives you an idea of what this family of measures is. This is kind of a way to interpolate between the modified choice distance and the robustness. And this is actually more general than for just separable states or incoherent states. One can, for example, because, okay, let me go to the next slide actually first, because why do we care about this? Because first of all, it's a strong monotone for each M. So each of these, each member of the family is a strongly monotonic quantifier of the resource. And furthermore, we can choose the set to be something else. So for example, if we choose F to be set of PPT states, we obtain a function which is strong monotone under PPT preserving maps. Which kind of, you can always define this for arbitrary resource theories. You can define quantifiers in this way, and you obtain many properties for free, essentially. Another thing is that this is actually exactly computable for pure states, both for entanglement and for coherence. So it provides a computable family of measures of entanglement. That's a kind of more surprising, perhaps, part that is computable for entanglement. And so here I give you the example for coherence. For entanglements, it's exactly the same, except that you compute this function of the Schmidt vector and not the original vector. That's the only difference. For coherence, we use the pure states. For entanglement, we use the Schmidt vectors instead of the states. And so on pure states, this function, this family, whole family, reduces to a family of norms. We call these norms the M distillation norms, and I will motivate this name later. But essentially what this is kind of like a, this norm is defined as like a trade-off between the L1 norm and the L2 norm, with some parameter that depends on the chosen M. So this actually has a strong relation with majorization theory, and we will get to that later as well, but the optimal choice, this can be solved exactly, and the optimal choice will kind of, you have to construct an explicit kind of majorization relation there, and what we get here is essentially, this can be solved exactly, and one can only have to solve this optimization problem, which is kind of just checking M inequalities, or actually probably even less because you can do binary search, but yeah, it's a simple problem anyway. And this has an explicit formula. This is kind of like you have your original state, psi, and you choose the first few coefficients, as take the L1 norm of these, and then the last few coefficients take the L2 norm of these, and yeah. And this is the exact solution of this problem. But why do I keep, why do I mention all these things? Well, yeah. Nobody, I know from experience and from some referee reports especially, that nobody cares about resources if you don't have any operational interpretation for these things. So now let's talk about the operational interpretation. The problem of resource distillation is as follows. We start off with some number of copies of a given state row. And using the three operations in a given resource theory, so some subset of CPTP operations, we want to transform it into some number of copies of the maximally resourceful state. So this can be maximally entangled, maximally coherent. And here I choose the dimension 2 and then take a few some copies. So this is kind of the standard notation, as in, like for entanglement, this is a singlet. For coherence, this is a maximally coherent qubit state. And the idea here is that this is kind of like considered like a unit of currency in the given resource theory. So kind of, you want to know how many units of currency you can obtain from the original state. And the distillable resource is defined as the maximal rate that one can obtain, as in the asymptotically optimal rate that one can transform these n copies into some number of copies of the maximally resourceful state. So the point here is that essentially we want these to be exactly in the limit. We want the states to be exactly equal to the some number of copies of the maximally resourceful state. Let me just briefly mention that if one takes instead the three operations and are applied on the maximally resourceful state, and we want to do the opposite transformation, so go from the maximally resourceful to the state, that's called resource cost. And it's kind of dual. And essentially, if these two are equal, then essentially what we are saying is that one can asymptotically reverse any transformation. So it's kind of, at the same rate, we can transform back and forth between a given state and the maximally resourceful state. So kind of, this is a very strong property, but we will deal especially with this distillation. And the problem here with this definition is that we take this entropy n go to infinity. And that is a problem, because what does it mean to go to a lab and generate infinitely many copies of a quantum system? Well, that has no meaning, really. So it has two problems, actually, because first of all, we don't have access to infinitely many copies of a quantum system. And second of all, we have to actually perform operations on these copies. And the more copies of a state we have, the more difficult it becomes to perform operations on them. So it becomes important to be able to characterize what happens actually if we don't have this infinitely many copies. So this is nice in a mathematical sense, but in a lab, we can never hope to achieve these optimal rates here. So instead, let's look at the other end of the spectrum and say we only have one copy of a state and want to apply free operations and transform it into some number of copies of the maximally resourceful state. In this way, we define the one-shot distillable resource. Here we allow for some error in this transformation, because we generally we cannot hope to achieve this transformation perfectly. We allow for some small error epsilon, and we say we define this to be the maximal number of copies of the maximally resourceful state that we can obtain by applying just one application of the free operations. And the reason why this is useful is because if we take the limit of this, we obtain back the original definition. We take the limit of number of copies going to infinity, and then the error vanishing asymptotically. The important point is that we have to allow this error, because it only vanishes asymptotically. It does not vanish. We don't require the error to vanish at every single application of this operation, only asymptotically. Just for notational purposes, we will define this quantity to be called as the fidelity of distillation. So that's the we fix some dimension m. And we want to transform. So this is the m-dimensional maximally resourceful state. So this is going to be maximally entangled or maximally coherent state. And we say that this is the maximal fidelity we can obtain. We will focus on these quantities because it will be easier to characterize this than this. So now we will be considering two different resource theories, as I've mentioned, and different sets of operations. And the choices here are kind of the standard choices. So for entanglement, we will focus on PPT operations, which are positive operations with positive partial transpose, and separability-preserving operations, which are the ones that preserve the set of separable states. They cannot take a separable state to an entangled state. So this is essentially the largest. This is sometimes called the maximal set of operations in the resource theory, because essentially, if an operation is outside of this set, then it cannot be a free operation. A subset of separability preserving are the separable operations, so the ones that have a separable Choi matrix. Then we have our LOCC, and one-way LOCC is at the bottom of the hierarchy. So it's important that we have a kind of a hierarchy of operations because we can use these to bound each other. For coherence, we have some equivalence, because maximally incoherent operations are the ones that correspond to separability preserving, because these are the maximal set of free operations. Then on the other hand, we have strictly incoherent operations, which are kind of like LOCC for coherence. I guess that's the closest equivalent, but it's not exactly equivalent. Then we have DIO. So these are dephasing covariant incoherent operations. And it's a bit of a strange class of operations, because it has no corresponding class in entanglement, kind of no intuitive correspondence. But it makes physical sense for coherence, and it's kind of, I think, out of the different classes of operations, I think it's the one that we can actually say it has a physical meaning. So it's important to characterize in many ways. So to present our first result and to relate the family of measures I've introduced previously, the first result is to relate distillation with hypothesis testing. So the result is very general, because it says as follows. It says if your fidelity under some class of operations, if you have a class of operations such that the fidelity of distillation is given by this quantity based on the family of measures we've introduced previously, then the rate of distillation of this resource is given exactly by the so-called hypothesis testing relative entropy, which we minimize over all free states. And this quantity is, if you're familiar with the test of hypothesis testing, essentially, it's the problem of distinguishing between two states with one-two outcome measurement. So we have a P of M consisting of M and identity minus M, and we want to apply this, and essentially, we want to check which of the states, we want to see if we, well, essentially, distinguish between sigma and rho here in this case. And the hypothesis in relative entropy kind of represents the minimal error in distinguishing these two. If we have some bound on the error of in, so it's the minimal error of incorrectly accepting rho if we bound the error of incorrectly accepting sigma. That's not extremely relevant now, but it's just that this has an operational significance and it's actually meaningful. This we get for free essentially if we can represent the fidelity in this way. And of course, the big thing here is the if, but I will show that it actually is a very common property of different sets of operations. And the big question of this actually of this talk is why, or is this a very general property that we can actually write the fidelity always in this kind of way? Why do we care about this hypothesis of relative entropy? Because under reasonably mild assumptions on the set of free states, this gives us an asymptotic rate equal to the so-called regularized relative entropy of the resource. So this we know for entanglement. This has been shown for some cases by Brandão and Plenio. This is kind of the first the generalized quantum Stein lemma. So it's just kind of to give you an idea that it you will kind of, I mean, this is a commonly encountered thing in, for example, entanglement. So but it actually is a common property of different resources. Yes.
Could you please write down this t measure on the board so that we have it?
Yes, sure.
Because I forgot
Yes, of course, right, sorry. Yes. So there are different ways to express this, but okay, so this is the most universal, and I like expressing it in this way because it gives an immediate operational interpretation to the family of measures we introduced, and it's kind of like, so people knew that the robustness was related to distillation in some sense. That was very early on discovered, that kind of robustness is useful for distillation, but the whole family of measures that it's actually meaningful, I've never seen anything like this. That's why I like to present this family as an operational family of measures. So this was discovered by Brandão and Plenio in the paper about quantum Stein lemma, that under separability preserving operations, the fidelity of distillation is given by this. So they didn't write it in this way, but it essentially was discovered in this paper. That was the first example of a class of operations like this. So this tells us exactly that the distillable entanglement under separability preserving operations is given by this hypothesis testing relative entropy. However, this also happens, for example, for PPT operations. This was discovered just last year. This could have been, this was slightly implied in early papers by Rains, but it was also not made very clear that it actually is exactly this hypothesis testing relative entropy. So it was shown explicitly last year, and also we have this kind of quantity. The problem here is that these are no longer positive semidefinite matrices. So this is called the Rains set, and this is the set of Hermitian matrices, which the partial transpose, that's the trace norm. I didn't write the one there. The trace norm of the partial transpose is upper bounded by one. So it still is the hypothesis testing relative entropy, but now kind of we're minimizing it over a set of states which are not of matrices which are not necessarily quantum states. So it is not clear what it means physically, but that's what this quantity is. That's what gives us the rate of distillation. For coherence, here for separability preserving, we have, this is the maximal set of free operations, and this is the set of free states. There is a very nice correspondence that the fidelity of distillation is exactly given by this family minimized over all free states. These are the separable states. So one could expect that for coherence, we would have the same relation, that the fidelity of distillation under the maximal set of operations would be given by this quantity minimized over a set of free states. And it's almost like that, but not quite. Because what we optimize here over is the set of Hermitian matrices, which are trace one and equal, they are diagonal. So this is the diagonal map or fully defacing channel. So they are diagonal trace one Hermitian matrices. So again, they don't have to be positive semi-definite. And why? I don't know. It just happens that this quantity is exactly equal to this. And there is this gives us the difference between the Dirichlet's theories of entanglement and coherence, because there is no a kind of exact correspondence between these two maximal set of free operations. What is even more surprising for coherence theory is that the fidelity of the distillation on the defacing covariant in coherent operations is actually exactly the same as the maximal set of operations. This is surprising because this is a strictly smaller class of operations, and we know that it has much less power in many transformations than the maximal set of operations, but the fidelity is the same. So what does this tell us exactly? Well, we know from a result by Brandau and Gurs that this maximal set of free operations actually gives us asymptotically reversibility. So that's what I mentioned, that if we take the limit of infinitely many copies and infinitely many copies of a quantum system, then essentially what we get is that the rate of distillation is the same as the rate of concentration or dilution. Of the resource. So we can kind of transform back and forth. And we know that this maximal set of operations gives us this reversibility. So now what we show is that actually this reversibility is also achieved by this smaller set of operations. And so this is very surprising because there has been no example of a resource theory before for which we have asymptotic reversibility for a set of operations which is smaller than the maximal set of operations. Okay, we know that the maximal set of operations is related to asymptotic reversibility for arbitrary resource theories, but this set is strictly smaller. So coherence is a bit unique in this sense. I mean, we don't know if that doesn't happen for other resources, but none have been found so far. If you don't care about coherence, the results from coherence still can be used for entanglement, and precisely for entanglement of maximally correlated states. So if we have a state of one partite quantum system that I define as rho tilde, we define the maximally correlated state as kind of just kind of extending the state or adding zero rows to this matrix, essentially, kind of extending it to this bipartite state space. And if we have a state like this, then the fidelity of distillation under separability preserving operations is the same as the PPT operations, and is actually given by the fidelity of distillation under MIO of the corresponding one-partite system. So there's kind of an exact correspondence between distillation of entanglement of maximally correlated states and distillation of coherence. One might see that I didn't mention anything about LOCC, and probably that is the most interesting set of operations and the one that people care most about. So LOCC is notoriously difficult to investigate, but the one case where it's actually easier in some ways is this case of pure states. And here we know from Nielsen's majorization result that a state psi can be transformed into a different state omega if and only if the vector of squared Schmidt coefficients is majorized by the vector of squared coefficients of Schmidt coefficients of omega. And I abuse notation slightly here. I don't want to go deep into majorization theory, but essentially what the only thing you have to know about this is that there is an explicit set of conditions that allows us to characterize these transformations. And the same thing we get for coherence under strictly incoherent operations. These transformations are possible if and only if there is a majorization relation. And so the fidelity of distillation of pure states actually has been characterized in some sense in early results by Vidal. The problem, one thing that Vidal didn't notice is that this actually is equal to this M distillation norm that we introduced before. So if this fidelity of distillation is exactly equal to the M distillation norm of the Schmidt coefficients of the state, but I've already mentioned before that this norm is the value of this quantifier on pure states, this T, the family of measures T. And we've already shown that this T is the fidelity of distillation under separability preserving operations. So what we actually get is that for pure states, the distillable entanglement is exactly the same under any class of operations, all the way from one-way LOCC to separability preserving to PPT. Okay, so this is, to me at least, this is surprising because we know, for example, that separability preserving operations have a much stronger power. They don't have to preserve the Schmidt rank of a state and can increase the Schmidt rank of a state, for example. They just can do much more than LOCC can, but in distillation, they all have the same power. And not even asymptotically, they have the same power in the one-shot case. So it's a very strong result that shows you that we just cannot do any better by choosing a large set of operations. The same thing holds for coherence. I don't mention this because it's kind of obvious from the same relation that for coherence, we also any set of operations gives you the same rate of distillation. And just to recap the first part, I will talk a bit more after this, but I just wanted to recap. We introduced a class of these measures, T, that are monotones, strong monotones for any resist theory, and furthermore, they have this operational meaning of representing fidelity of distillation under a variety of different classes of operations. This allowed us to characterize the one-shot distillable coherence and entanglement in terms of this hypothesis-adjusting relative entropy for several classes of operations. And furthermore, we showed that pure state distillable coherence and entanglement are actually the same under any of these classes of operations. So now we want to apply this to obtain a kind of a stronger characterization. And one task that we can apply it to is the so-called assisted distillation. And I will focus here on coherence because we can get much stronger result and just things become computable for coherence. And I like when things are computable because, yes, just it's much nicer to have something you can actually compute. So I will focus on coherence from now on. And the setting here is that we have a shared pure state, psi AB. And there are two parties, Alice and Bob. So the protocol is as follows. Alice performs a POVM on her part of the system. Then she communicates the result to Bob. And then Bob has to use this information to distill as much coherence as he can. So theoretically, she should be able to distill more than if he was just distilling without any information from Alice. And why intuitively? So after the step one, we know that Bob's system is given in some pure state decomposition, which depends on the POVM which Alice applied. But then Alice communicates the result to Bob, so Bob actually knows which of the pure state he has, and he can apply an operation, lambda I, suited for this particular state. So that's how Bob can distill as much coherence as possible. So now what we define is the one-shot distillable one-shot assisted distillable coherence, which is the largest dimension of the... with this, what we define, with the figure of merit here is the fidelity of assisted distillation. So this is actually because, we know that Bob can apply a operation suited for every pure state, but we don't know which of the pure state he will have. I mean, it's a measurement, so we can never guarantee which of the results we will obtain. So we take this to be the average. We average out the results in this protocol and say that the average fidelity of assisted distillation is the kind of quantity of interest. And we want to characterize the best rate of one-shot distillation in this formalism. Well, this is optimized over all three operations from some chosen class of operations. So now we will simplify this in several different ways. So we have this formula for this fidelity. First thing, we can bring this optimization over O inside of this sum here. And we have optimizing over all pure state decompositions of row B of the reduced system. Yes?
So, you probably said this before, but what exactly are they aiming for? In the case of entanglement, they're aiming for a perfectly entangled state. In the case of this coherence, what are they aiming for?
A maximally coherent state. So it's like a uniform superposition of your basis vectors. You choose some basis, and then the uniform superposition of all the basis elements is the maximally coherent state. That is essentially the definition.
They're aiming for each one has a basis.
Coherence fixes a basis. You always fix a basis. And
basis for the individual system or basis for the product?
Well, yeah, Bob is distilling. Essentially, we care about the basis on Bob's side of the protocol. So, yeah, the basis is fixed on Bob's side.
So what, they're just aiming to do something? They're not aiming for some correlation between?
No. So if this was for entanglement, we would have three parties here. There would be Alice, Bob, and Charlie. And then, for example, Alice helps Bob and Charlie to distill entanglement. So that's why, because coherence is kind of a resource only defined for one party. So essentially, Alice has nothing to do with coherence. Alice kind of helps Bob initialize this protocol, and then the distillation is done by Bob. So if this was assisted distillation of entanglement, we would have Alice performing a POVM on a shared tripartite system, and then Bob and Charlie perform some operations to distill entanglement from their bipartite state.
So Bob is aimed, in this case, Bob is aiming for a particular pure state, is that right?
Yes, he wants to obtain as many copies as possible of this maximally coherent state, or kind of uniform superposition of the basis vectors.
Why that particular state?
It's, I mean, if you think about, if you think about the maximally, and I don't know if you can see.
No.
Oh,
yeah, it's okay, I can sort of see.
Okay. I could go all the way back, but I would take ages. So because the maximally entangled state you can define as So this is maximally entangled, and if you just remove one of these, this is the maximally coherent state. So this is kind of just the same kind of thing, essentially, just if you get rid of one of the systems. Coherence is a resource on one party, and it's this basis is fixed. That's the point. This basis is fixed, because otherwise it wouldn't make much sense. But you always fix a basis and say, I mean, your free states in this resource theory are the states which are diagonal in this basis. So this is the most non-diagonal state, essentially. That's how you can think about this. And it has a strong correspondence with entanglement. It's just a lot of these things become easier if you consider coherence. So that's why we usually now. I mean, I like starting with coherence because I think it gives much more insight, because just things can be solved exactly for coherence, and then they can be maybe generalized to entanglement later. But we will see that later, especially, that things just become nicer for coherence. But this protocol can be generalized. Now, if you think about Alice, Bob, and Charlie, so that's this was actually defined first for entanglement. This kind of setting of assisted distillation.
I suppose it doesn't matter what phase you give to these bases.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's just like you have some freedom in the maximally entangled as well. Yeah. That's the kind of freedom in phases you have. Okay. So in with this fidelity, we can bring this optimization over the free operations inside of the sum, and then we have this quantity. Which we minimize over all pure state decompositions. Because, so just to recap, we optimize over decompositions because this is what Alice allows us to do. Alice's POVMs are essentially in one-to-one correspondence with Bob's pure state decompositions. So that's why we essentially, by doing this, we optimize over all POVMs on Alice's side. But now we can forget about Alice, actually. We can just optimize over pure state decompositions of Bob. That just makes things easier to write. But now we know that this quantity is just the fidelity of one-shot distillation, the one we considered before. Just the fidelity of distillation in the one-shot case, under some chosen class of operations. But then we showed this actually to be the same for any class of operations. So again, if this setting is entanglement, then what we get is that assisted distillation of entanglement is the same, gives the same rate under any class of operations from one-way LFCC to PPT. So because it depends on this kind of pure state decomposition, so as long as you deal with pure states, the rates of distillation will be exactly the same under any class of operations that you're considering. This is what our result gives us. But now this is still not very computable, because we have to optimize this over all pure state decompositions, and that's usually an ugly optimization problem. So we want to represent this something a bit nicer. So let's look deeper into this. We have this. We know that the fidelity of distillation, one-shot distillation, is given by this M distillation norm I mentioned before. Every norm can be written is in its dual form, and in the M distillation norm looks like this. So essentially, we're optimizing over all pure, the overlap with all pure states which have a bounded maximum, the largest coefficient, and the L2 norm bounded by one. Now we can write this just rewriting the same thing. We can write this as the optimization of fidelity. We have the optimizing fidelity of a pure state with a pure state. Sorry, so this is a, well, yeah, well, you don't have to be pure, but we optimize over this set. This is just rewriting this condition in terms of a set of matrices that we optimize over. And why do we want to write it like this? Well, there is a result, and it's actually a very strong result, but that tells us the fidelity. If you maximize the fidelity of any matrix, any mixed state, over a set which consists of convex hull of pure states, this is the same as maximizing the fidelity, the average fidelity over all pure state decompositions. So this is actually quite a strong result, because it requires a lot of properties from the fidelity, which it surprisingly satisfies. And yeah, it tells us that if we want to compute this, which involves the optimization over all PST decompositions, we can instead phrase it in terms of optimizing over this set of matrices. But this, we know that this is the fidelity, the average fidelity of assisted distillation. So now we have a formula for this fidelity in terms of maximizing just the kind of standard fidelity over a set of matrices. However, it still doesn't satisfy us because this set is ugly. We don't really know how to optimize over this, and it's not clear what the set is exactly. But we can make a few observations here. So first of all, this is a set of positive semidefinite matrices. They will have trace less than 1 because of this condition. And the largest coefficient will be bounded by 1 over m from this. So what we have, we can define this relaxation of this set as the set of positive semidefinite trace less than 1, and such that the largest coefficient, which is the largest coefficient of the diagonal part of the state, is less than 1 over m. Why would we want to do this? Well, because it's difficult to optimize over this set, original set, but this one is just an SDP problem. So this can be solved exactly. So if we pretend that this is the set we care about, what we get, yes?
Just to understand the exclusion, it means that to recover the original set, we should say this is a matrix and it's rank 1, and you relax this rank.
Yeah, rank 1, yes. If you have a rank 1 matrix in this set, that's exactly in this set, yes. But then these sets are actually not equal. So we have a proof that they are not equal in general. So in dimension 2 and 3, they are equal. In dimension 4, they are no longer equal. So that is unfortunate, because this would be a very nice property to have. But nevertheless, we get a relaxation in the general case. We say that if we want to, this is our rate of assisted distillation. And if we relax this fidelity, we get an upper bound. Now with this, if we just rearrange the terms on this definition, what this corresponds to is the maximum, essentially, we optimize the infinity norm, so the largest coefficient in this fidelity ball of the original matrix. This can be written in terms of the h-min, so the min entropy. And we abuse notation slightly here because it's not really what people usually call the smooth epsilon and min entropy, but it's almost the same and it satisfies the same property. So we just use this terminology here. But the important point here is that if we relax this fidelity to optimizing over the set m prime, this has a nice formula in terms of a kind of a smooth min entropy. And as we will see, this actually gives us very nice properties, especially asymptotically. Yes, so this is perhaps a surprising relation here, because now we use one of the most fundamental results in algebraic geometry called the gross index inequality, which surprisingly finds application in coherence theory. So this tells us that there exists a dimension-dependent constant, a very small constant actually, that these sets, even though they are not equal in general, they are very close to each other. They are very, very similar to each other, and this constant of the correspondence between the sets is very small. So exactly what this gives us is that the rate of distillation can be upper bounded by this h min that I showed you before, and now we get a lower bound as well from the h min and minus log of a tiny number, so it's even tinier now, and essentially it's a very strong bound for the one-shot case. Essentially it characterizes fully the one-shot distillation. So even though the sets are not equal, the original set m and the set m prime, they are not equal, we don't really care about that, because for this quantity, it pretty much characterizes it fully. And we can actually get an exact correspondence between the two if we go into the asymptotic limit. So we use something called the quantum asymptotic equipartition property. And this tells us this h-min is upper bounded by the von Neumann entropy of the diagonal part of the state. I write approximately because there are some epsilon terms, but we don't care about epsilon because we will just take it to go to zero anyway. So it's upper bounded by the von Neumann entropy, but then it's lower bounded by also the von Neumann entropy minus some terms of the order 1 over square root of n. Now, if we combine these two, what we have here is a term of order, if we just take order 1, then if we divide this, what we get is it's upper bounded by the von Neumann entropy and lower bounded. Now, we have this term of order 1 over square root of n from the asymptotic equipartition property and order 1 over n from the gross index inequality. So essentially, we know we don't just know that it converges to the von Neumann entropy of the diagonal part of the state. We actually have exactly, we exactly know the rate of convergence. That is a very strong characterization of this protocol. And essentially, we needed all the results that I introduced in the previous, in the first part of the talk to kind of characterize the pure state distillation and all these rates to be able to make these statements about the distillation of the acidic distillation. And I would say this is a complete characterization of this protocol, because essentially, if we can get any stronger results, there will be just a tiny improvement over what is here, because this rate, this one-shot rate is characterized almost exactly by this quantity, and asymptotically we have an exact correspondent, exact characterization and rates of convergence. So essentially, the characterization of pure state distillation allowed us to obtain a complete characterization of this protocol. And to summarize, this I've already mentioned before, but just to give you an overview again, we have a family of measures with an operational meaning of in distillation. This allowed us to characterize one-shot distillation under many different classes of operations. The strongest result, perhaps, is that it allowed us to characterize fully the pure state distillation, which then allowed us to characterize fully acidic coherence distillation. And one could hope to obtain similar results for entanglement. It's just they are much more messy. So right now we don't have them exactly, but it's a bit. We can get stronger results for coherence in this case. So I think it's interesting to look at coherence, and I hope that I convinced you even a bit that coherence can be interesting in its own, and especially mathematically. If you care about the mathematics, if you care about obtaining. I mean, care about using Grothendieck inequality. That made me very happy, actually, to be able to use something like that, because people use that in like complexity theory, okay, but I never do that. So I never get to work with things like that. But suddenly in coherence, you know, we get this nice mathematical result. But there are some open questions still. So we know that the fidelity of distillation under some classes of operations has this correspondence with this class of measures F, T, with the set F. But how general is it? Can we do this for other sets of operations? I would like to characterize this, but so far I don't have an answer kind of that would tell us if there is a kind of an exact correspondence between these kind of concepts. Or is maybe it's just there's too many examples for it to be a coincidence, but it's difficult to find a general correspondence. The most interesting problem, perhaps the most physically relevant, is what can we say more about distillation under LOCC? And in this case, I would like to get, we have plenty of upper bounds for distillation under LOCC. I would like to look also on lower bounds and kind of be able to say something more about these sets. But obviously, LOCC is notoriously difficult to even to say anything about. And furthermore, one generalization would be to consider more general quantum resources. That also is non-trivial because we use some properties of the maximally entangled, maximally coherent states to be able to kind of simplify many of these results. So if we don't have these nice states we can work with, then it becomes much more difficult. But obviously distillation, and this formalism especially, it applies to arbitrary resources. So one can hope to obtain results also for more general resource theories. And that's everything. Thank you very much. Yes.
Just a question on this slide. You mentioned the work that you published, and you said that there is work ongoing in the abstract. So what can we expect?
So right now we're writing up the assisted distillation of coherence.
Okay.
The results about entanglement are not written up. So we're still working on to show. So there are results that we are hoping to get about. We know that, for example, that for entanglement we have some equality that, for example, for pure states, the rate of distillation is the same. But we want to show that as soon as you go out of pure state, even if you consider a very simple class like maximally correlated, already then there is a gap between LOCC and separability preserving operations, for example. And this is something we almost have, but I don't want to say anything because, well, you never know what will happen. So that is something we, but the results for entanglement essentially follow from what we have for coherence here. This relies on majorization theory, on kind of distillation properties that apply to entanglement in the same way. So one can already use these results for entanglement, but we will also publish something soon about this.
Can you say something, because you were talking about like using majorization and so on, so can you say something that was not known about noisy operations?
Oh, what, sorry?
Noisy operations. So that's the research theory of like mixtures of unitaries, but it's not quite.
We have not looked into that, and the thing is that I don't know, because things simplify for pure states, that is the problem.
What's that, sorry?
Things simplify for pure states here, so we
sure,
have...
Yeah, but there you have majorization of the spectrum as your...
Yes.
As your criteria, so it's kind of simple.
So I don't want to say that we would exactly be able to apply what we have, but probably one could hope to get something. It's just I don't work with this usually, so I just didn't do that already, but yeah, we can actually discuss maybe later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have this set M sub M, the nasty one,
yes.
The square next constant. Is there a reason this set would be nasty that you'd want to approximate it? Like, can you encode some kind of hard problem in it or something? Or the fact that you're using square next constant to approximate it seems like it's very NP-hardish.
So yeah, I mean, it looks NP-hard.
Yeah.
But that's all I can say, really. Yeah. I mean, you have a convex hull of these states. I mean, you know, first of all, I hope that they will be equal, you know, because numerically they seem very similar. I mean, if you kind of just try to approximate this numerically, but actually there is, there are examples explicitly where they are not equal. And in particular, what if M is equal to D, this set, if you look at this set, this is, let's consider a trace equal to 1, and then the largest coefficient is less than 1 over d. But then if you fix the largest coefficient, then you know that all of them are 1 over d.
Yeah.
The diagonal coefficients are 1 over d. So that's a set called the correlation matrices. The set of positive semi-definite matrices where all of the coefficients are equal, that's called correlation matrices. Well, usually they are fixed to 1, but we can just renormalize it. And we know that the correlation matrices that the extreme points of the correlation matrices can be ranked 2 as long as dimension is at least 4. So that's what we use to show the difference between these two sets. And this set has been looked into a lot because these correlation matrices are important. So people have actually looked into this and they know that it's not just this set. That there is a gap between them and this gap can get bigger with higher dimension. So I would expect this to be NP-hard, but yeah, that's all I can say. Yeah.
Yeah. This relaxation is kind of like the Gomendy-Williams and Maxcut relaxation.
Yes. It's pretty much exactly the same. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, we cite plenty of Maxcut papers and stuff like that. Yeah, when we discuss this. Yeah.
So, any other questions?
Yeah. Just going back to what I asked before, would it be fair, sorry, to say that the main interest in this coherence is because it's kind of a warm-up for entanglement?
So I've heard some people refer to coherence as entanglement for babies.
Uh-huh.
So I think it's a good way, maybe. So what I like to stress in this talk is that it can give us insight about entanglement. And what I like about it mathematically is just it's way easier to characterize coherence than entanglement. And so in that way, you could think about it. So I think if you wanted to argue operationally, it has a much, it doesn't have as strong of an operational meaning as entanglement does, definitely. So if you care about the physics side only, coherence is perhaps not the most interesting thing to look into, but mathematically it is very interesting, so yeah.
Yeah, I'm not so worried about the operational meaning, but entanglement has an invariant meaning. In other words, to say that a state is maximally entangled, you don't have to mention anything about bases. Whereas to say that it's coherent, it rests very heavily on your choice of basis.
Well, yeah, that's just a different setting, right? I mean, there are settings where your basis is fixed. If you want to consider something that, for example, commutes with your Hamiltonian, you know, like things like that, that kind of, there are cases where fixing a basis has a meaning. And it's like, for entanglement, you know, you say you don't fix the basis, but you fix a cut, for example. If you have many parties, you have to fix a cut between them. And then if you change it, you can't just change the cuts because you're changing the whole Riesz theory, essentially.
You're talking about non-bipartite?
Well, no, if you have many systems, but you choose a bipartite cut between them, like if you have a 20-dimensional, you know, 20-dimensional Hilbert space, you know, you have a very high dimension and you have to fix some cut between like which part is party A, which part is party B. But then if you suddenly change this cut, then entanglement changes its meaning.
Sure. But
and in the same way, if you fix a basis, then you can also, of course you can change the basis.
There's a physical motivation for a particular cut.
Well, also there can be physical motivation for choosing a basis.
There could be, but I'm just noticing that the notion of maximal entanglement is more independent of base once you have fixed two subsystems, then the notion of maximal entanglement is independent of your choice of basis in either subsystem. That's all.
Yes, yes. Coherence
this
is.
This other notion seems.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have any basis independence.
Absolutely, no. Coherence is fully basis dependent, yeah.
That's all.
Mm-hmm.
Do other questions for Bart? Let's thank him again.